This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Bill Price drops by to tell us about the Kansas Permaculture Farm and Garden Tour taking place this weekend. And Dr. Guy McPherson is in town on a speaking tour. He stops by KKFI to share his concerns about abrupt climate change. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. The Mid-America Regional Council has a news release. There's an ozone alert issued for tomorrow, Tuesday, July 18th. They're advising people with respiratory disease to limit their outdoor activity. It's an orange ozone alert day, and this alert indicates that an unhealthy level of ground-level ozone is expected in the Kansas City region tomorrow for the second day in a row. And although everyone is affected by poor air quality, exposure to high levels of pollution is especially harmful to children and older adults with asthma and other respiratory diseases. You can find out certain steps to take to protect your health by visiting MARC online, MARC.org. EcoWatch.com reports a federal court on Friday rejected the Trump administration's effort to dismiss a lawsuit challenging the approval of fracking in federal waters off California. The suit, filed by Center for Biological Diversity and Wishtoyo Foundation, notes that the government violated the National Environmental Policy Act and Endangered Species Act by failing to carefully study offshore fracking's risk before allowing this dangerous oil extraction practice. The suit points to offshore fracking pollution's threats to the marine environment, public health, imperiled wildlife, and sacred Chumash cultural resources and places. Quote, "This is a big victory in the fight to protect California's coast from offshore fracking's toxic chemicals," end quote, said Kristen Monsell, a Center for Biological Diversity attorney. The court also rejected the Trump administration's attempt to dismiss a similar lawsuit filed by the state of California. The state's case also argues that the approval of offshore fracking without carefully studying the risks violates the national EPA and that federal officials violated the Coastal Zone Management Act by failing to determine if offshore fracking is consistent with California's coastal management program before allowing the practice. Yale.edu reports a study in the Marcellus Shale region of western Pennsylvania has shown that even after being treated, wastewater from hydraulic fracturing still causes environmental events. The study published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology said that the highest concentration of the pollutants found were found in lake sediment layers deposited 5 to 10 years ago during a peak period of fracking wastewater disposal. The radium levels were found as far as 12 miles downstream of treatment plants. Hydraulic fracturing now accounts for one half of U.S. oil production and two-thirds of natural gas production. The scientists said that while the potential risks associated with these contaminants are unknown, state regulators should enact tighter regulations governing the treatment of fracking wastewater in order to protect human health and the environment. And finally, Grist.org reports an electric company wants customers to pay to clean up water it contaminated. Duke Energy wants to raise rates on 1.3 million North Carolina residents to offset the $200 million yearly it'll take to clean coal ash from its plants out of drinking water wells. Nearby residents want the company's shareholders and execs to foot the bill, especially since locals are living off of bottled water thanks to the contaminated wells. Duke Energy, the U.S.'s largest electricity provider, worth $59 billion, already has a sullied rep in North Carolina. In 2014, one of its waste pits leaked 40,000 tons of toxic muck in the Dan River. About three dozen residents affected by the coal ash filed comments with the state, challenging Duke Energy's request to up their energy bills. Yes, the company asked North Carolina for its blessing in passing more than $5.1 billion in cleanup costs on to customers. That's all I have for the news today. I'd like to invite Mr. Richard Mabee into the mic.
Thank you there, Naturally. Appreciate that. Good evening, everyone. This is me, Richard Mabee, and your host for the evening. And as we have two guests tonight, so prepare yourself. We got some information. I think that it's going to be interesting to you. And as usual, I'm going to give out the number here just in case any of you have a question that you'd like to ask. Please feel free to dial in. That number is 816-931-5 516-931-5534. And as I usually do before I start a show, I always have to have something that I want to say to you all about the environment or about the times we live in. And I know that you're aware of the fact that we are under some extremely hot, hot weather. So the ozone is going to be high all week. For those of you who remember the session we did on the increase in violence based on ozone levels up in Chicago there doing that study, we're headed in. That guy that called in the last time I was on, if you're listening, again, be aware of that. We need to make sure we're watching what's going on in our communities. But the biggest thing I want you to do is to check on elderly. I heard a notice being given on the radio for people to take a bottle of ice water and stick it in your refrigerator and get it frozen and go out and give it to a homeless person. I'm going to do better than that, not better than that. I'm going to say also be mindful of our elderly. You know where they are. We all know where they are. And they're living in these homes and they don't have the pride won't allow them to reach out to people when they're suffering. So let's be neighborly. Let's be neighborly and check on them. Give them a call. Stop by and see them. Take them a bottle of water. Do whatever you got to do. Just let them know that we still care about them, because we, none of us would be here if it hadn't been for them doing what they've done. I'm getting to be an elderly, so I'm making sure y'all know how to act when I'm living in my house by myself. Okay, let's get ready for this show. I'm kind of excited because I'm talking about two subjects that even though on the peripheral I'm very much aware of, I really want to hear what these guys have to say. So our first guest is Bill Price. Bill, you want to introduce yourself there and tell them what organization you're with?
So, thanks for having me here tonight. I'm representing the Kansas Permaculture Institute. We're a 501c3 organization that's over representing most of the northeast portion of Kansas. We do drift over onto the Missouri side, but the bulk of the people that we are participating with are Leavenworth County, Douglas, Jefferson County, Johnson County, Wyandotte County. So that's where the bulk of our people are at.
Yay, Kansas. I want to mention that I want to come back to the institute that you say that you're with, but first I want you to explain to us what permaculture is. And the reason I'm doing that, I know that there are many folks who have no idea what we're talking about when you talk about permaculture. So can you just give us kind of an elevator definition?
So permaculture can be a lot of things to a lot of different people, and there are a lot of ways that you can implement it. There's like 12 principles to it, and you can do it on a small scale. You can do it in your backyard. You can do it on your kitchen counter. Or you could do it on 50 to 100 acres. So it's not limited to, I got a lot of property, I can make this work. If all I have is a backyard, a side yard, a lot of these principles could still apply. So it's a way to do permanent agriculture. Okay. So we're used to a farmer, not that what farmer's doing are wrong, but we're used to the farmer going out, planting the crop, nurturing the crop, harvesting the crop, plowing it all under, and then starting again the next year. Well, there's other ways to do some of those things, and that's permanent. So we plant more fruit trees, we plant more edible bushes and edible grains and nut trees that are permanent, and there are a lot of perennial vegetables that once you plant them, then they will year after year after year continue to grow. So as long as you nurture the plant, it will continue to feed you without you having to put it in the ground year after year after year like annuals.
Okay. My start in this in permaculture came, as I told you earlier, with my association with Steve Mann, who was with me from the start as far as building my organization, building a sustainable earth community. And he also was very much responsible for this program that we're on right now. He was here initially then when he had the time to do it. And of course, you know, he has branched off into bigger and better things. I was also with him when he started his Food Not Line. And I'll never forget seeing the first video or the first DVD on permaculture. I think it was the person out in California that started this particular, well, that's where it was. Yep. And they were walking through their yard. You mentioned it, but they were, the yards were edible.
You just graze as you walk around your yard.
Your yard.
Yeah.
That was so impressive. I mean, that's what really captivated my attention about it. And somehow they had tied that into the lack of having yard grass and stuff, because it replaced your need to mow grass.
Well, because we can't eat the grass.
Yes.
Our systems won't allow us to digest grass, but we can digest herbs. And we can digest fruits and berries and nuts.
I love it.
And you can, and then we can throw in some places you might be able to throw in some chickens.
Yeah.
Maybe a goat for milk, and so depending on where you live in the city, what the rules and regulations are, you can get by with just a little bit, or you can add to it based on where you're at and how much time you have.
Well, so many times we take these programs and we technologize them. Because we have to explain it, and that's understandable. But that was a glamour to a permaculture yard when I saw that DVD. And the person that was walking through the yard and talking about it would reach up and break off something off a plant, put it in their mouth and stuff. I thought that was so cool.
There's nothing more satisfying than being at somebody's house and they say, if you see something you want to eat, just go ahead and pick it. It's okay. We're so used to not being able to have that,
right,
that when you're in these environments, you get to where you're not always hungry all the time because you're nibbling throughout the day.
There you go. And now I want to back up to the institute. Tell me about why it is considered an institute.
So the Kansas Permaculture Institute, its primary mission is to teach permaculture design courses.
Okay. So you teach, you got students coming.
We have. So we're doing this in two different fashions right now. The Kansas Permaculture Institute used to be CA Permaculture, but where they've been teaching in the Lawrence area. Steve Boring has been the mentor who's been driving a lot of this. Has been teaching permaculture design courses probably since 2008, 2009. Okay. And so we're teaching on the public, people at large, just whoever who wants the knowledge. It's a 13-week course, and we teach all the principles of permaculture and do a lot of on-site practicum, hands-on work. And then a couple years ago, because Steve is a teacher by nature, a biologist, he ventured up to the KU campus one day to environmental sciences and said, hey, I think this is important that you should teach this at the college level. And so they're also now at KU teaching permaculture design as a credited course at the university, so that those students that are doing environmental studies or things along those lines have an opportunity to learn this knowledge. So we're teaching a public sector, and we're teaching a student college sector, because everybody's going a little bit different in their path. That's how they use this, you know. Students may be going for a more career aspect of it. You know, how can I apply these principles in my career? Those of us on the public side is, how can I apply this at my farm, at my home, at a neighbor's property, at an urban garden? And the like.
Okay, I'm going to go into why you're here, but I'm going to come back to that part you just hit on. Okay, there's something going on this weekend. That's why we got you here, right? Just tell us about that.
So this weekend we have what we're calling, this is our 8th annual Permaculture Urban Garden and Farm Tour. So on Saturday, throughout the day, we're starting tours of urban gardens that we would consider in town. And then on Sunday, we're going out to the farm, to a farm rural setting, where we're seeing things done on a little bit bigger scale.
Okay. This tour is different than the other farm tours. Is that right? Or is this a revamp of the farm tour they used to have?
So there are several farms. It's really interesting. There's several types of farm tours going on in Kansas City these days.
Okay.
And so they're all a little bit different. So at some point during the year, there's a Cultivate KC does a farm tour.
Right.
And those are mostly local urban type farms, if I understand. I might have that off just a little bit. I'm not real sure what their geographical zone is. And then I know I think it's through K-State. There's the Call Valley Farm Tour, which happens mostly out on the Kansas side, and then there's
Kansas,
Kansas, and then there's our tour, the Kansas Permaculture Institute Tour, and I'm sure there's probably more. It's a very hot item right now. There's a lot of people engaged in it, and I think everybody's trying to get the word out.
Yeah, and I think that's good because people want to know, and that's what we're about, making sure people know what's going on. Now, but yours is going to have a theme of permaculture.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
So on Saturday, we're gonna start the day off at about 8 o'clock. We're gonna meet up north of the river, at Antioch Urban Growers up on 44th Street. The folks up there, they got some greenhouses going. They got fruit trees, they got nut trees, they got aquaponics going on, and so they're up there. They're teaching, they're growing, they're going to farmers markets. We was up there last year. It's a fairly big, robust, lots of stuff going on, and I think they're reaching out to a lot of people. I think this year they've expanded their reach into three or four other farmers, people that are growing for the market, so that they're able to help those folks to get more done.
I want to repeat the number again out there just in case you decide you want to make a call, 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Okay, now we out north. Where do we go?
Okay, so after we spend about an hour or so at Antioch Urban Growers, we're going to come back into Kansas City to Nile Valley Aquaponics with Dre Taylor.
Okay,
and I think a lot of people, to my understanding, are understanding that Dre has a really important project going on. He's had some setbacks, but I think he's making some tremendous gains, and so he's trying to address what we would call lack of food in a food desert.
Right.
And so without going into a lot of detail, I mean he's got fish growing, and he's growing vegetables, and he's got this really nice recycling project where he doesn't have a whole lot of inputs coming in, but he will eventually have a whole lot of outputs going out.
Okay.
Not to mention he's providing for the local community, and he's also helping to employ some of the people that live in the immediate community.
We've had Dre on the show. Unfortunately, our show is at the same time he has his mentoring program with the young guys, so we have to do his basically on the air. But I was there for the grand opening when he opened it up, and I agree with you. I love that neighborhood. It's right in the middle of what you would consider urban community. And again, bar none, is doing a sight scene education that somewhat transitions the verbal conversations that most of us are having. When you go around him, you actually see it. He got chickens, he got goats.
He's got it all. And what's nice is it's a rather large operation, but it's totally scalable.
Yeah.
It could become much bigger.
Right.
But for other folks, you could do it on a much smaller scale. You know, maybe you don't have fish every week.
Right.
But you would at least be able to harvest some fish. At some point, you'd be able to grow a lot of your own green-type vegetables. And so I think it's totally scalable to a smaller home environment.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad he's on the tour. Then where do you head?
Okay, then
first
after...
First of all, let me ask, are they going to be on a bus? Or are they
So it's unfortunate that I'm going to say this, but it's how it is. This is all we're going to give you guys. We're going to give you everybody addresses, and then you have to find your own way.
Okay.
And so I keep thinking in the back of my head, you know, this is there's got to be a way to be environmentally sound about this, and maybe one of these days, we'll pursue this. But people are coming from all over. And so I know we have some folks coming up from Wichita. You know, a lot of the folks are coming out from Topeka, maybe some folks from Manhattan. Maybe we'll have some folks from Blue Springs. And so it's kind of hard to find a central place for everybody to come to and then drive all over the country and then come back to a central place. So I think we're doing the best we can by getting the word out, and one of these days we'll get the energy part right.
So it's possible, this is Saturday, right?
Right.
So it's possible Saturday people will see a caravan of cars headed in one direction.
Could very well be, yeah. And okay. And hopefully we'll all have our farmer hats on.
All right, where we go?
Okay. After lunch, we're gonna head into Roland Park. Hopefully I pronounce this right. We're going to the Grotewall Urban Garden, and so this is actually in somebody's backyard on their property. Okay. So it's a residential house, and they've just turned a lot of these things into what we call a food forest. And so depending on what time of the year it is, you know, here we are. We're just walking around grazing. It's a pretty nice property. There's a lot going on there. So we've seen the big high tunnels, and then we see the aquaponics, and now we're going to bring it in to see it in somebody's backyard. How we could apply this to our yard?
To your yard. So it's not a business.
It's not a business. They may harvest and send some of their stuff to the farmers market, right. but I don't think that's their intent.
Right. Okay.
And then the last stop on Saturday, we're going to be heading out to Merriam, Kansas. There's a place out there that Cultivate KC has been working on for some years. It's their big food forest, and so it's an abandoned lot that's been turned into pretty much an orchard, using permaculture principles, layering, stacking. You got your tall trees, you got your short trees, you got your shrubs. There's just an immense amount of produce, fruit, whatever, that is probably right about now is at that time where it's harvesting at its most bounty.
We did have a caller. She did not want to be on the air. She just wanted to make sure that you gave out a website with the information on it. And so,
hello. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Yeah.
Okay, now going back to
maybe we should give out that website real quick.
Okay, so if you want to find some more information, we're in a lot of different places. You can definitely find us on Facebook, Kansas Permaculture Institute. Probably at the top of the page, you'll find something about the farm tour. And if you want to find our website, you can find us at Kansas Permaculture Institute. You just type that into your search engine, and it'll take you right to where we're at.
Okay. Okay. We're down to our last couple of minutes, so we're just going to hit this anyhow. Again, I want you to give us the times, the dates, or just in case, Tim, I know we keep bouncing around it.
Okay.
But I want you to give that.
Okay. Well, on Saturday, we're starting out, like I said, up at the Antioch Urban Gardens up on 44th Street, North Kansas City. We're starting at 8 o'clock. Everybody's going to show up. If you need to register, you can still register then. And that will start about 8:15. And then we'll end Saturday sometime around 4 o'clock.
Okay.
And then there'll be snacks and beverages that will be kind of a follow-up fellowship there at the Food Forest. So it'll be a time that we've all run around the country. Now it's time to sit and talk about what we've seen for the day.
Bill, I want to tell you, I really appreciate you coming in and doing this, but I want you to come back.
Well,
the
definitely
reason
come
I
back.
Want you to come back, I want you to make an explanation to us about those layered things you were talking about.
Okay.
Because I want people to understand what that means, okay? All right, folks, you heard him. This will be Saturday, so come on up. Let's go out there and give him my support. There's some people working hard to make America beautiful again. So come on out here and find out what this permaculture ideal is about. Thank you now.
Okay.
We're going to take a break.
Cornell West.
If we keep our eyes not so much on each other's shortcomings and inadequacies, but keep our eyes on the prize, something bigger than us, something better than us, something grander than us that can appeal to the better angels of our nature, appeal to the best of us at a moment in which the worst of each and every one of us is being accented and accentuated.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday, 9 a.m.
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-921. 1903 or go to our website, aftertheharvestkc.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Great Lakes Water on the move on this current cast. In the Great Lakes, changes in wind and air pressure can spawn what are called seiches. Joel Barnosky of Buffalo Niagara Riverkeeper explains.
To imagine water in a sink or a bathtub sloshing back and forth, it bounces off one end and then it bounces off the other. That's what we call a seiche. It's really that bouncing back and forth motion.
For example, on Lake Erie, wind can move massive swells from Cleveland to Buffalo and back. Seiches range in size and power. Most create rip currents that can put swimmers in danger. But a rare massive seiche in the 1800s swamped Buffalo and killed 88 people. And seiches can occur in smaller bodies of water too, just like your bathtub. CurrentCast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
All right, I'm back, and we're getting ready to start the second half of the show, and we have a special guest here to help us introduce our special guest, who is Guy McPherson, Dr. Guy McPherson. And the guy that we have sitting here next to me that's going to start this conversation with, his name is J.D.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Kansas City. Welcome to Kansas City, Dr. Guy McPherson.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you today.
This is day nine out of a long tour, isn't it?
Well, something like that.
Yeah, nine's my lucky number. So, you're here and you're going to be speaking about abrupt climate change. And I want our listeners to know that he's speaking at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church tomorrow from 6:30 to 9:30. And I just wanted to dive right in, Doctor, since I have followed you and your podcast, Nature Bats Last, on the Progressive Radio Network for some time now. And when we interviewed you by phone last year, you and I, we talked about the program and what it talks about. Can you tell me? And can you tell our listeners what it talks? And also, take the time to talk about your new co-host, Corey Morningstar.
Right. So we talk about everything. We go deep on any number of subjects. I think that we are among the most radical shows on the airwaves. So we talk about the economy and where that's headed. We talk mostly about abrupt climate change because that's been something of my specialty for the last several years. Mike Sliva was with the show for the first 105 episodes. And he opted out a couple of months ago. So my new co-host is independent journalist from Canada, Corey Morningstar, and I'm ecstatic about that. We'll actually be airing a show tomorrow, Tuesday the 18th at 3 p.m. Eastern at prn.fm, so you can catch it on your internet dial. So it's a new era, basically, for Nature Bats Last Radio with the brilliant voice of Corey Morningstar. And on the last few episodes, we have had Serena Raphael, our Australian correspondent, mm-hmm. call in as well. And she will be joining us tomorrow, too.
Excellent. One of the things that you talk about abrupt climate change, and you're very frank and very bold.
And it's been very expensive.
It has been very costly for you personally. That's the sound of Dr. McPherson dropping his phone, Kansas City. One of the things I did want to touch on, I got started on the whole, for want of a better term, doomer community with an author by the name of Daniel Quinn. And Daniel Quinn he's the author of Ishmael, My Ishmael, The Story of B. One of the things he talks about is the whispering of mother culture. Someone who you live outside of this culture, you are almost, 90% off the grid. What are your observations regarding the mass delusion that when it comes to the dominant culture and the stories it tells itself when it comes to this particular set of living arrangements?
Yeah, you know, Mike Sliva describes civilization or this set of living arrangements as the story we tell ourselves about ourselves. And that's pretty good. And it really is a story that we are telling ourselves. Daniel Quinn started pointing it out many, many years ago with his award-winning book, Ishmael, and he followed up with several other books, fiction and nonfiction, as you pointed out. Really, we are building the most enormous game of Jenga you can imagine. Jenga is the game with the little wooden blocks, and you build a tall structure from these wooden blocks, and then the point of the game is to take the blocks from the bottom and move them up on top, and the person who takes the block out that causes the thing to fall over loses. And so we've been destroying the fundamental underpinnings, the foundation of habitat for Homo sapiens for a long time by removing environmental protection, by triggering climate change and now abrupt climate change, through any number of adverse actions that the set of living arrangements is responsible for. And yet people are surprised that we can't maintain the infinite growth paradigm.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about this one of the mass delusions that this culture seems to have bought into is the idea of the infinite growth paradigm. And you talked about that. Are you surprised that mainstream media, the media that has given us Donald Trump, is starting to sound the alarm? I actually saw where your name was actually mentioned in passing for like 30 seconds or something.
Right. There's a story in last week's issue of New York Magazine that David Wallace Wells wrote, 7,300 words, about the horrors of climate change. And he interviewed me for a couple of hours, didn't mention me in the article, but it was obvious to anybody reading it who he had talked to and who he was talking about. And so that triggered a firestorm of backlash with people unpleased with his message, which was really relaying my message.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't mention my name, but many of the responses did. So Michael Mann and two colleagues, for example, wrote a piece for the Washington Post calling me a doom cultist hero. And I take issue with that. I'm actually a doom cultist superhero. It's a minor but significant difference. And also he lied about me. He said that I predicted extinction of all life on Earth within a decade. And that's grounds for libel. If I had an attorney and money, I would pursue him, but I don't. But these are the kinds of lies that mainstream climate scientists tell about me and my work on a regular basis.
Why? What's the point of lying to people about this predicament, Doctor? By the way, you're listening to Dr. Guy McPherson on KKFI 90.1 FM. He will be at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church tomorrow, July 18th, 6:30 to 9:30. Please continue.
Apparently, if people understand how dire the situation is, they might start living differently. There's no money in extinction. I guarantee it. So if you tell people that they are going to die, they might not buy that extra pair of shoes. They might not buy those things they don't need to impress people they don't know. They might stop spending. And if that happens, well, the people who benefit greatly from our everyday purchases might start to suffer a little bit. And we can't have that. A bunch of people are going to lose their privilege if the rest of us stop spending so frequently and so much that it starts to cut into the corporate bottom line. So I think that's a big part of it.
I wanted to get in and talk to you also, Dr. McPherson. Keep in mind that some of the folks that we're just listening are learning as we talk, okay? So when you talk in terms of using a word like extinction, what are you saying?
Yeah, extinction is one of the three pillars of the field of conservation biology. I'm professor emeritus of conservation biology at the University of Arizona. Extinction means the death of the last member of a species. The other two pillars of conservation biology are speciation. the process by which a new species comes into existence and the characteristics of its predecessors, and habitat, the habitat that supports every single species, including Homo sapiens. So if we lose habitat for our favorite species, then we aren't able to supply food for ourselves, supply water for ourselves. And we already see evidence of this around the world, the Middle East and Northern Africa. People are fleeing to Western Europe, for example, because they've run out of habitat. They've run out of the ability to support themselves with food. Seeing similar kinds of things happening in small island states in the South Pacific as people are running away.
I agree with you with that. And from my knowledge from David Corton, that's one of the things he talked about, in fact, back after the deal in Rio de Janeiro in the 60s and the 90s. When those people left there, they were under the opinion if everybody stopped doing what they had been doing wrong that day, the collapse is still inevitable. So I'm saying, are you kind of heading in that direction too about it being inevitable?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, all species go extinct.
Right.
Period. The only question is one of timing.
Right.
Right. So you're going to die. I'm going to die.
Right.
Every individual organism dies, and every species goes extinct. More than 99% of the species to occupy the planet so far have gone extinct.
Okay, but that was what motivated me to get involved in the environmental world with environmental literacy, because when they left that meeting, the thing that they were supposed to do was to go back to their hometown, the third world countries, and the different places. In fact, I say that if the Pope wasn't there, he had somebody there that made him aware of it, because that's why he came out with the encyclical. The thing about it is that they were supposed to come back and start teaching the future generation how to rebuild this planet. Do you have any of those kinds of thoughts, or is yours a complete annihilation?
It's difficult for me to imagine there will be a human being on the planet.
Okay, so yours is annihilation.
I think it's locked in because of the global average temperature rise that we've guaranteed as a result of too little action for too long a period of time.
Okay, well, again, I think that the people who are listening can now see a good reason to come out to actually hear you speak tomorrow night. I think you are speaking from a profound level that deserves to be heard. And I'm sure there are people who will have questions, not negative, because I'm not a doomsdayer. But at the same time, I think the message that you have is one that's not being heard in this country, on this planet. And I'm very glad to sit here in front of you and hear you speak.
I absolutely agree that it's not being heard much. And trust me, I don't want this to happen.
Right.
I don't benefit from this happening in any way.
Exactly.
In fact, where I live, habitat for humans is already disappearing and will disappear far sooner than it will almost every place else in the world. So I'm no fan of human extinction.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And I would love for people to point out the evidence indicating that the evidence I'm putting forth is just wrong. I would love that.
We're all touching on something, and one of the things that I want to talk to you about, Dr. McPherson, is community. Because one of the things... It's necessary, and my friend Susan, who's here with us and who brought you into town, and we should thank Susan LeCamp publicly for bringing Dr. Guy McPherson here. Thank you, Susan. The climatology community is a community in deep despair. There are people who are following this who is every bit as qualified as you are. They're in deep despair. Some of these people are already making plans. I've seen stories and anecdotes of people who follow this. There was just something on YouTube. A woman is just, you know, I mean, can you talk about the overall state of despair and your sense in what you do and other climate scientists do? And what is the source of that despair?
Well, one of the things we rarely talk about in this culture is death, grief, grieving, death, dying. These are the topics that we don't have, so that we don't talk about. They seem to be taboo for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about death of individuals, it's new to us, even thinking about it. We don't think about our own deaths. If we did, we might live with a little bit more urgency. You know, but instead, we act as if we're going to live for a very long time. Nothing will ever get in the way of that. And so then you extend that to everybody you know, to the entire species, and it's a cause for great despair. I mean, we are our favorite species, let's face it.
Yeah.
And we really like ourselves, and we are really very special. We have the big brains. We have these eyes that allow us to see how the wonders out there. We got the opposable thumbs going. We got all kinds of advantages that allow us to live in all kinds of environments. And if we have any sense at all to appreciate, to enjoy, to benefit from the natural environment. And so it's horrible to even think about our own deaths, so we usually don't, much less to think about the deaths of everybody we know. So, of course, we don't want to go there. So you see these climate scientists, such as Natalia Shakova. It's been years since she did that video with Nick Breeze for Invisination, in which she breaks down and cries when she's talking about what's going on with the climate. Mm. That's been years ago. Mm. And other climate scientists and people who study the climate are starting to come on board and recognizing that the situation is so dire that it's already costing lives. Millions of lives lost every year to climate change as habitat disappears.
And let's make something abundantly clear. I'll get to, these aren't, you know, in Christian Parenti makes this very clear. These aren't migrations. These are refugees. These individuals are refugees, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. They aren't going on vacation.
Right.
They aren't making a summer trip and coming back when the vacation's over. These are refugees. They are fleeing areas that are no longer capable of supporting humans.
Okay, my concern is you. I want to come back so people can understand you. What motivated you to go to this depth as far as the conversation is concerned? What was your motivation?
Well, as a conservation biologist, I've been studying those three pillars of the field for a long time: speciation, extinction, and habitat. And I've been concerned about climate change since the early 1980s when I was a graduate student and studying the issue. And then it became clear over time that this set of living arrangements, whatever you want to call it, civilization, society, industrial civilization, the Industrial Revolution, is responsible for a lot of terrible things that are happening on the planet: accelerated erosion, fouling the air, dirtying the water, putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, on and on and on. And so it's no big step. It's no addition. It's not much additional connecting of the dots for me to go from a 30-year study of climate change and that much time interested in habitat for other species to make the transition to our species as one of roughly a trillion species on the planet. Mm-hmm. and our role and our response to these kinds of changes that we've brought onto the planet. You know, we're driving to extinction about 200 species every day.
You know, Bruce Coburn some years ago had a song called If a Tree Falls. Mm-hmm. And that was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And take out life at a rate of something like every single day. It's almost like a psalm in that he sings the chorus and then spoken
and
words.
Jackson Browne's Before the Deluge.
Yeah, before. Oh, one of my all-time favorite songs.
You know, Bob Dylan and Joan Baez. During the American Cultural Revolution in the late 60s and early 70s, people were actually writing, speaking, and singing about this stuff.
Eve of Destruction.
And yes, absolutely. And now we just push it away.
I want the people who may not be able to get a chance to come see you tomorrow, and I'm sure there's some that can't for a variety of reasons, to leave here with something. So what would you want them to leave here with just from hearing you speak?
Well, yeah, they could check out all the information I'm going to present at my blog, guymcpherson.com. So if you want the facts, that's the place to go. I have a couple of books, and you can find them there that describe how you might live with this information. For the most part, though, mine is beyond a scientific message, and some people have told me that it's a spiritual message. Maybe it is, depending upon how we define that term. So I encourage people to live with urgency, that someday you're going to die, and someday our species is going to go extinct. And I can pretty much guarantee that both of those are going to happen faster than you think they're going to happen.
You Google if you Google these four words, faster than previously expected, oodles of information comes up. It is just surprising.
That's right. And a whole lot of it has to do with climate change. For example, the Larsen C ice shelf broke off.
My next.
Last week in Antarctica, all the climate scientists were saying this wouldn't happen for hundreds or thousands of years, and now it's done. And so this enormous dam for land-based ice, for terrestrial ice, has been unleashed.
And this is one of the areas that I have my biggest concern about, because the amount of information that has been given out about that incident is low. People mm-hmm. still don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean, it was just a little blurb on news, but as far as any urgency being associated with it, it's not there. So that comes back to that original question. What can we do to deal with our portion of the population? My portion of the population is straight out inner city, you know, multiculturally. What can we do?
Right. We can live. We can live as if our days matter. We can live as if the lives of the people around us matter. Mm. So we don't have much control at the level of society, you and I.
Right.
But we do have considerable control, or at least considerable influence, over the lives of the people we come into contact with on a regular basis. Co-workers, family members, and so on. Let's talk about the urgency of living. Let's have relationships with those people that are meaningful, so that when we do die, and we all will, our relationships with those people will be complete.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of wishing on our deathbed that we had made up, that we had apologized, that we had said we're sorry, that we said I love you to the people who are slipping away.
Yeah.
So let's deal with the relationships with urgency, first and foremost. And then, of course, there are lots and lots of right actions each of us can take without being particularly attached to the outcome, because I've been taking what I thought were right actions for a long time, and the world keeps getting worse.
Yeah,
you know all about that.
Yes. You don't ever say surrender. You don't ever say don't do anything. This is not Vladimir and Estragon.
Absolutely not.
No.
No, why give up? What better judge of our character than our willingness to act in face of impossible odds?
I know we're getting close to our time. We got a couple of minutes here, but I want you to repeat where your blog is located. I want you to repeat where you're going to be on the air. It went pretty fast, and take for granted everybody out there is like me, somewhat brain dead, and you have to do it real slow so they can get it written down.
Yeah, you can find out all kinds of information about me at my blog, guymcpherson.com. And if you go to the coming events tab there, you can find out all the information about my speaking tour, including tomorrow night I'll be at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut Street, right here in Kansas City. And then there's St. Louis and Indianapolis and more Indianapolis and East Lansing, Michigan, and Chicago again and so forth.
And the time for that show tomorrow?
6:30.
6:30 to 9:30. Okay, you heard that, folks. That's tomorrow at All Souls. You all know where that's located. You're there listening in. If not, you gave out some station, PR or something.
My radio show broadcasts every Tuesday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern, that's 2 p.m. here, at prn.fm. That's the Progressive Radio Network.fm on your internet dial.
Gary Knoll.
Gary Knoll's established that station.
Right? Yeah. Hey, I really appreciate you coming out, JD. I appreciate you. And
my pleasure.
Bringing this gentleman here. I think it's been a highly qualified show. I love the way you carry yourself, and I love the way you speak.
Thank you, Richard.
Sometimes we might even be able to get you on the air and call in. You can speak on the phone from wherever you're located. So if you run into a goodie, you want to tell us about it, just contact us, okay?
Thank you.
They'll know how to get with me.
All right.
Thank you all, JD. For coming
Thank
out.
You.
And I'll turn it back over now to
Naturally. All right, Kansas City, I got a few more events for you. Atomic Homefront is a 96-minute documentary film about the city of St. Louis and its little-known nuclear past as a uranium processing center and toxic waste dump, beginning with work for the Secret of Manhattan Project during World War II. You can learn more by seeing the movie that describes it all, called Atomic Homefront, on July 20th. this Thursday from 7 to 9:15 p.m. It's hosted by Peaceworks. It'll be at the same church as Dr. Guy McPherson's going to be tomorrow. It's All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut. Atomic Homefront will be showing July 20th, Thursday, 7 to 9:15 p.m. You can contact Ann Solentrop if you'd like more information. And Sue Ellen Trop, and Suellen@gmail.com. Congress wants to cut the Clean Air Act and risk our community's health to pay off big corporations and polluters by blocking limits against dangerous pollutants. You can let your voice be heard by attending the People's Hearing for Clean Air and Water this Thursday, July 27th from 11 to 1 p.m. at the Plaza Branch Library. It's the People's Hearing on Clean Air and Water this Thursday, July 27th in the afternoon from 11 to 1 p.m. at the Plaza Library Branch, and it's hosted by the Sierra Club and Moms Clean Air Force. You can join Bridging the Gap in partnership with Ripple Glass if you'd like to do some volunteering, neighborhood canvassing. Are you passionate about recycling? Volunteer with Bridging the Gap in a new outreach partnership with Ripple Glass. They'll go door-to-door in neighborhoods near IKEA, leaving door hangers to let residents know about a new Ripple Glass recycling drop-off bin near their neighborhood. You can also bring your recyclings that you need, or your electronics for recycling, in your boxes of paper for secure shredding. July 28th, Friday, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Sprint Center, 1407 Grand Boulevard. And then we got a couple events in Lawrence as well. July 19th, Kidsapalooza, recycled art from 2 to 3 p.m. at the Lawrence Library, 707 Vermont Street. Join Spencer Museum of Art staff as they turn trash into treasure. Kidsapalooza program is for 5 to 6 year olds at the Lawrence Public Library. And then July 22nd, there's another activity, Art Cart, Mudscapes, and Rock Art. Get inspired by the Kaw River for this special art cart and create your own mudscapes and rock art. The program takes place at 8th Street Boat Ramp in North Lawrence in conjunction with the Long River Project Festival. And this was a lot of events we had today, so I'll be posting them on our Eco Radio Facebook page if you get on Facebook and check out Eco Radio KC so you can hear more about what you might have missed.
Don't mess with these sisters. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
An Oklahoma-based company that is planning to build a natural gas pipeline in Pennsylvania has run into some unexpected opposition. Nuns!
A group of Catholic sisters has set up an open-air chapel complete with pews and an altar directly in the path of the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline, which is planned to cross the land they own.
The order, known as Adorers of the Blood of Christ, has a land ethic that says the earth is a sanctuary, and they are going to work to protect it, according to a spokesperson from the group Lancaster Against Pipelines.
Rewire reports that last Sunday, more than 300 people attended a meeting called Stand with the Sisters at the outdoor chapel.
The nuns have refused to sign a lease, so the company is taking them to court in an effort to seize the land through eminent domain. A hearing is scheduled July 17th.
The proposed pipeline is 183 miles long and costs $3 billion. Environmentalists fear that any leak could damage the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
Duke Energy in North Carolina is seeking a rate increase to clean up pollution that it allegedly caused.
The company is the largest generator of electricity in the country and wants its customers to pay, on average, 15% more, part of which will help cover the cost to clean up coal ash waste.
State regulators and environmentalists say that Duke has allowed coal ash to pollute rivers and drinking water wells.
The ash comes from burning coal and is laced with many toxic chemicals. The Associated Press reports that in 2014, the company was forced to address how it disposes of its byproduct after an accident at a waste pit coated miles of the Dan River with gray sludge.
One homeowner, who has been forced to drink bottled water since chemicals appeared in his neighborhood, likened the situation to a septic company spilling sewage all over his property and sending him a bill to clean it up.
Duke Power denies that it's polluted waters, and it was successful last year in passing the cost of cleanup to ratepayers in South Carolina. The company says that cleanup is a part of the cost of generating electricity.
But Donna Lisenby of Waterkeeper Alliance told EcoWatch that working families struggling to make ends meet should not be forced to pay for Duke's negligent management of leaking coal ash ponds. It may be the first project in the world of its scale. That's what they're calling a program to assess how noise reduction from ships may help killer whales in waters near Vancouver, British Columbia.
More than 30 maritime companies like Carnival and Celebrity Cruise Lines and Maersk Shipping will voluntarily slow their ships when moving toward the Haro Strait to see if it will help killer whales.
The sounds from ship propellers are thought to interfere with the whale's ability to hunt, navigate, and socialize. The slowing will lessen noise underwater.
The shipping industry has worked with the Port of Vancouver for about a year to gain industry support for the speed reduction to 12 miles an hour, now set to occur for 2 months beginning in early August.
Orla Robinson, who is manager of the program, told the Vancouver Sun that they are trying to understand the relationship between slower vessel speeds, underwater noise levels, and the effects on the whales.
They will also see how the speed reduction affects the company's finances and operations. A representative of the Vancouver Aquarium said the underwater noise is one of the principal threats to killer whales who take up summer residence near Vancouver.
It contains twice as much water as used in the United States every year. That's the size of the iceberg that broke off the Larsen Sea ice shelf in Antarctica last week.
The berg itself may break apart, but could also drift into the South Atlantic Ocean. It's not expected to pose any risk to shipping.
It is not clear that the breakoff was due to global warming. Scientific American reports that the calving of the berg does not signal a change in Antarctica, and it is not the same warming conditions that are occurring at the other pole in the Arctic.
Dan McGrath, a glaciologist at Colorado State University, said that the Antarctic Peninsula is the most rapidly warming region on the continent, but that the calving is natural. However, he added, it also was concerning.
Still, climate change cannot be ruled out as a cause of the calving of the Delaware-sized iceberg.
And finally, if you were really, really thirsty, would you slurp out of your dog's water dish?
Well, if you don't wash your water bottle every day, it's probably worse than if you drank straight from Fido's bowl.
That's according to research conducted by the team at Treadmill Reviews. They swabbed a dozen water bottles used by athletes that hadn't been washed in a week and sent samples to an independent lab for testing.
They found that water bottles carried on average, more than 300,000 colony-forming units of bacteria per square centimeter.
That's roughly six times the amount found on pet bowls and just slightly fewer than on a toothbrush sitting unwashed near a toilet.
They tested different kinds of bottles, too. Bottles with squeeze tops, slide tops, screw tops, and straws. Slide tops were the worst, and a bit surprisingly, bottles with straws fared the best.
That may be because water drips to the bottom of the straw rather than sticking around to attract moisture-loving germs. However, those bottles had only slightly less bacteria than the average home toilet seat.
Not all the germs were bad, but some were the kind that can cause skin infections, pneumonia, or even blood poisoning.
So what to do? They're not recommending that you toss your container or switch to bottled water, which would just add to the landfills and deplete groundwater resources.
Instead, just be sure to wash your bottle every day. And in choosing one, stainless steel bottles are naturally antibacterial and don't develop germ-harboring cracks.
We'll put links on our website on how best to clean your water bottle and to those icky findings by Treadmill Review.
Until next time, stay hydrated, my friends.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss your water infrastructure challenges and solutions at WIC 17, October 30th through November 2nd. Find out more at awwa.org/H2O InfoCon.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
During the beginning of the 20th century, yet another unique American music form developed. When Mexican-American musicians from Texas began to play the accordions brought by immigrants from Germany and Czechoslovakia, the result was Tejano, or Tex-Mex music.